please click the subscribe button and the notification icon. It will help us a lot.
Hi, this is Rodrigo from Level Up Your Business, Life and Mind. And today, guest, I have someone that I consider a mentor. His name is Carlos Michelli. He has a lot of experience on entrepreneurship, investing, innovation, and trying to teach entrepreneurship to people who are just starting out. He was involved in the creation of a program called Exosphere in Chile that now has moved to Brazil, if I think I have the information correctly. Then he was one of the first persons to have the Estonia e-residence, which is like a permit to have a residence in Estonia, but not to live there legally, but to have all the benefits of Europe wherever you are. It pretty much allows you to be a digital nomad. Also, he has created Escuela of Nuevos Aliados, which is the school for new allies. And he was trying to teach entrepreneurship through that to people in Latin America. And now he has joined that project with Boost Drive, pretty much giving his project away and being a consultant for the new phase of the program. And he has also created a program called the Estonia Experience, where you can pay a bit of money to go to Estonia and have this event. And this event happens pretty much in winter and also in summer. And you can go there, meet other entrepreneurs, learn all about the benefits of Estonia, which you should really get into it, because the e-residence of Estonia is a really amazing program. So that being said, welcome Carlos Michelli.
Hello Rodrigo, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So for those who do not know about you, can you tell us a little bit more about your experience? How did you get started?
Sure. It's kind of, as the years go by, it gets harder and harder to answer that. So I started, I guess, like with entrepreneurship around 10 years ago. Mostly, I get very involved with the early days of Twitter and the early days of blogging. I was living in Buenos Aires. I'm from Argentina. So I was living in Buenos Aires, and just through Twitter and Skype and blogs and all that kind of stuff, started networking with people online from my job. Back then I had a typical corporate job, and started meeting all this kind of, you know, interesting tech entrepreneurs and writers and bloggers and travelers, whatever, from all around the world. And through them and through all these online conversations, I sort of was exposed for the first time in my life to the idea of being an entrepreneur, the idea of launching business online and all that kind of stuff. And so the first business I ever launched was with five people that I met on Twitter. I think three of them I still haven't met in person ever. And the other two or three, I don't remember anymore, we met later, but we really just launched a business online like 10 years ago. And since then I just, you know, experimented many, many times. I tried a bunch of different things. There's always been sort of this common thread throughout my businesses, which is the idea of being more of a connector than a creator. The idea of like that, I think what most people usually need is to meet more of the right people, because most economic transactions in the world is a collaboration between two people. Somebody's giving something, somebody's receiving something, whether that's advice or a product or a service or whatever. And so almost everything I've done has been around that. When I built sort of schools, it was really about the right people meeting the right people, whether it's as a you know, your classmate or your colleague, or meeting the right teacher that you had the right knowledge. It was never me having the right knowledge. It was just me bringing the teacher and the student and whatever. So I did the same thing online, and I did the same thing with this Estonia experience thing. Is I came to Estonia. We're gonna get into that, but basically I realized, wow, Estonia is so interesting. There's so much happening here. More people need to see this. Now I'm not the expert. These people are the experts, but I'll build the bridges. And so, and the last thing that is actually what I'm doing now the most is called Mesa, which is sort of my full-time thing. Is a very, very new startup. It's actually still sort of we're releasing the private beta in like 2 weeks. It's the first time I'm building a SaaS business, a software service. And the whole point of it is to help people get more referrals, get more clients, get more advice, get everything through their best contacts that they have online, while spending less time networking, spending less time in social media, less time sending messages to everybody, scanning feeds and having calls and meetings. Less of all that, more clients, more referrals, more help from your network. So I'm really obsessed with the whole people leveraging their connections, and my entrepreneurship path has been always around that.
Yeah, this is something interesting because people, when they think about entrepreneurship, they also, well, first there's the group that think that they have to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, right? Or the next Steve Jobs. Then there is a group that understands that they are not going to get to that level, but at the same time, they are like, oh yeah, I still want to be a millionaire, and they think they have to create something, that they have to be the innovator, something like that. And yeah, I think that I place myself as you, like I don't think I am the creative. Many of the things that I have done and that I have implemented are not my ideas. I did not invent them. I just start meeting a lot of people and get these bits of knowledge, and then something clicks and it's like, oh, this thing over here can be joined with this one over here, and now we have a much better system or much better concept for how to use this. And that's what I've been doing through my business through all this time. So yeah, I think there is this space that is not being talked about that much, where there is tremendous value in just, as you say, putting people together, putting ideas together, and just watch them flower pretty much.
Especially in I think we're still learning what it means to be connected online. I think it seems like an obvious thing, but when we're talking about social media, when we talk about email, we talk about instant messengers, all those kind of stuff, all those tools, I think they're still the earliest ideas we've had about how we should see our network online, how we should see our relationships online. And that's why we're having all this sort of like struggle with, you know, balancing our attention in social media. It's like everything is mixed together, our friends and family with people that we just met on some event many years ago, like everything is this mass of people. So there's, when it comes to the impact that people will have in our careers and our business and in our values and everything online, I think we're still trying to figure that out. I think it's very early, and so there's still a lot of room to innovate there. It's not, because innovation is not this universal board that we're all playing behind, whatever, Steve Jobs or Apple or Google, where you can innovate at a bunch of different things because you're the one person that understands that specific problem better than anybody else. And so, and it's also proven sort of that innovation almost never happens in a vacuum. It's never the isolated guy in the basement just thinking by himself. It's usually you go to the world, you learn some things, you think about something a lot, like very deeply, and you connect the dots in a way that nobody else did before. But you don't create the dots, you usually connect the dots. So in most cases, innovation is connecting, is bringing things together. Even in artistic innovation, even in, you know, science, everything. So I think we're all innovators, and there's a lot of room to innovate. We just need to sort of lower the expectations or lower the bar of what innovation means. It shouldn't be this like, oh, I created like a, you know, time machine. It can be a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely. And also realizing kind of the potential of the new tools that we have to our disposal. I see, at this point, I think that the main thing that I see people having problems with are not knowing that their problem already has a solution. They think that something is going to be really hard to do, and then there is a solution already, a software already that they can implement. And that even happens to me. Like, for example, recently, one of my mentors we have with him a mastermind group with a lot of entrepreneurs, and we were trying to he was trying to manage that through a Facebook group and a forum, and then he used another platform and integrated us in it. And this platform was so much better, and it's called Notion. And now I see that this platform has a couple of years of being invented, and I never knew about it. And when I started playing with it, first it is really complex. You can do a lot of things there, and you can for those who don't know about it, you can personalize it however you want, which is kind of creates like, if you look for Notion in YouTube reviews and things like that, all the reviews last about 30 minutes because it's so complex and you can do so much on it. And my mind was blown, and it was like, okay, I can bring like a lot of automations from my business to this thing, and that will solve a lot of problems. And then again, I didn't knew it existed, even though even the guys from the future were using it, and now it blew my mind. But then again, I see many people having issues with communication. It's like, why don't you use Slack? And they don't even know what Slack is, or Trello, or many people don't know what Zapier is. And I think that was one of the best inventions ever, which is, to be kind of meta, Zapier is an app that lets you connect other apps together. So right. There it is. Like, you have the value of connecting things that are not connected together, and then doing the bridge into connecting things. So you can pull the information from one app and put it into another app that they don't have anything to do with one another, but you have now a solution that you can automate there. And yeah, I think that as you say, there are many things that are changing. We still do not know the full extent of being connected. We see this also for the bad side, like people doing some jokes or doing something bad that they think that they are going to get away with, and then you have a video on the internet and it goes viral, and now everybody knows that you have done a bad thing.
which everybody has.
Yeah, so exactly.
We've all done something wrong, and so yeah, it's really messed up.
Yeah, definitely. Although there have been a couple of cases where people have really crossed the line. So for to go a little bit dark here, there was this lady that I don't know where she got the kittens, but she had a lot of kittens in a bucket, and she was throwing them all into a river, and she thought that. She has done that apparently a couple of times, and she thought she was going to get away with it. We got the video. The video got viral. Now everybody in the world knew that she was doing that, and obviously that wasn't. I don't think many people are doing that in their lives. So, we have got corrupt politicians, including as well. So. On that end, it's kind of a couple of good, but obviously they can be a little bad when somebody does a joke on Twitter and everybody takes it out of context. And again, like, everybody has done a dark joke over their life. It's not the end of the world, right? But
totally.
But happens. And on this topic of kind of discovering new things, can you tell us, for those who do not know about the e-residence of Estonia, can you talk us a little bit more about it?
Sure. So the e-residence, so yeah, I'm currently in Estonia right now. I'm in Estonia. For those who don't know even where it is, it's a small country, 1.3 million people, right next to Russia, right below Finland, across the Baltic Sea from Finland. And so sort of in Eastern Europe, right? Cold country. And Estonia, after the Soviet Union fell apart, a little bit of background I think is going to help. Estonia basically had no money. It was a very poor country. And so they decided, because they had no money, that the only way to move forward as a new country was to invest, to go all the way in the digital path, to connect, you know, get everything connected on the internet as fast as possible, to try to avoid paper as much as possible, try to avoid having offices and bureaucracy as much as possible. Not so much because they are just, oh, we want to be better. It's more because they couldn't afford bureaucracy and paper and office and everything. So they went digital very early, way earlier than most countries. So they were the first country to declare internet as a human right, the first country to have every school connected to the internet in a country. So they got early, before every country in the world, to a lot of digital milestones. And the most the most glamorous one, or the one that sort of caught people's attention the most, was that in late December 2014, Estonia was the first country in the world to launch an e-residency program, sort of a digital residency. And I became an e-resident in the first 2 weeks of February, something like that. So like a month and a half after it was out. Back then it was still very hands-on. You had to go to the police and they had to do a lot of very physical things. So they would know what spoke English in the police. So I had to go with a translator, whatever. Now it's super polished and you can do it from anywhere. But this program, what it basically did is it allows anybody in the world, basically anybody can become a new resident. There's no big qualification. Anybody in the world can have access to some of the digital services that Estonians, local Estonians have with their government, but you don't have to be Estonian and you don't have to even be in Estonia. So you don't have to, you can be any resident that never set foot in Estonia in your life and you're any resident of Estonia. So for example, you can start a company in Estonia, you can pay taxes in Estonia, you can sign contracts with your company as an Estonian company. You can do a lot of those things. Now it's not, that doesn't mean that everybody could just sort of like avoid all kinds of taxes and all that kind of stuff. Because Estonia, it really depends on what are the tax arrangement between Estonia and your particular country. So maybe it helps more for certain people that are in the European area, whatever. But yeah, basically this was sort of this idea that Estonia can unbundle the services that they provide to their citizens and offer some of those services to people that are not Estonian citizens. And this idea just took off like crazy. And I think they now have, I don't know, like maybe a million, I don't know how many people, but a lot of e-residents. And I know they've done, I think last year they made like $10 million or €2 million from taxes by e-residents. So they added $10 million in taxes by people that are not living in Estonia. So that's like a net profit pretty much, because like, what is the cost of having a new resident, right? So it's been a fantastic thing for Estonia. And for me, it was great because it allowed me to operate when I was moving around, to operate my business with a lot of freedoms that Argentina didn't give me. Having my company there, my bank account there, it's also not just like, it's not just the legal possibilities, it's also the efficiency. Like Estonia is, it's so advanced in terms of digital life. They have every errand that you can take in Estonia. You can do everything online except marriage, divorce, and buying a house. So other than those three things, you can do everything else online. So when you run a company, you have to do a lot of things. You have to do a lot of little paperwork, you know, bullshit. So Estonia makes that a lot faster and cheaper. And so that's one. That was one of the best advantages. Another one is that when you're starting your company, basically Estonia has a 0% tax for the money that you reinvest in the company. So if you get paid, so here's how one of the ways that it saved me money. I had my company in Estonia. I was paying a freelancer in Argentina. That payment is not a salary. That is, I'm hiring a contractor. So that money, that money that I would get paid and pay this guy, I paid zero taxes on that. So that saved me a lot of money, because for the first 2 years, I just reinvested everything that I made into the business, which means I paid no taxes. So when you're starting, that's when you need money the most, and that's when it's the most impactful. So yeah, this is sort of some of the things about the residency, and it's definitely been the thing that put Estonia in the map of everybody in the world for the last 5 years, more than anything else. But they're doing a bunch of other things now. For example, they have the first digital embassy in the world in Luxembourg. So if you were to drop a bomb in Estonia and all the country disappears, all the data of Estonia, all the citizens, everything is in a data center in Luxembourg, protected. So if Estonians are, they just leave the country and they operate everything online, they can basically run the whole country in the cloud through Luxembourg. So it's pretty crazy what they're doing.
Yeah, and the thing is that also with all those benefits, because again, as you mentioned, when you're starting, you need all the help that you can, not only on the level of tax, but at least for me, I suck when it comes to legal things. I suck when it comes to taxes, and the least amount of work that I have to do through that is better for me. And especially when you are trying to learn it as a business owner, like, because once you open a business, it's like all this weight of knowledge pretty much is being put in your back, and you have to learn it as fast as possible. And that is hard. So the fact that you can do these things incredibly fast, and well, I have a business register in the US, and I know the difference between the processes in Europe, in Estonia, and the US. And even though the US is way, way, way faster than my own country, I know for a fact that Europeans are way more efficient when it comes to digital processes, and especially Estonians. Like, again, doing a business in the US takes you about 2 weeks. Doing a business in Estonia takes you about 5 minutes.
We had a, just so you know, we had in May this year, we welcomed, because with the Estonian experience, we welcomed people from all over the world that want to come see Estonia, not so much in terms of tourism, but more in terms of we take them to companies, we take them to meet people from the government, we take them to meet people from education, fundraising, like whatever, like all kinds of different verticals in Estonia that sort of together show the puzzle of why Estonia is such a, it really is the most digital country in the world. It's by far. And in May we had a bunch of students, MBA students from USC, which is a very prestigious university in the US, and definitely maybe the most prestigious one in, after Stanford, maybe in the California, or in the top five, I'm sure. And I remember that they came from the US and they came from California, you know, the Silicon Valley, blah, blah, blah. They think they're sort of in the top of the world. And when they met with one of the digital advisors of Estonia here, he told them like, hey guys, just so you know, the US is 20 years behind Estonia. Like it's, there's so much behind, there's so much more behind than they think. And it really doesn't hit you until you come to Estonia. Once you see it, it's like, oh, wow, this is just nuts how fast everything works.
Yeah, to be honest, US is really, really far away from technological innovation. And
yeah.
I think especially when it comes to handling money. So for example, you don't see a lot of programs of debit cards with amazing benefits over the United States. I see a couple of them who are from Europe who are trying to come to the United States, and they are having a hell of a time to launch it there, because there is so much regulation, there is so much bureaucracy, there is so much laws against what they do. But on the other hand, like I think Pioneer started as well in the United Kingdom. Also, we have all these new programs, TransferWise, Curve, Revolut, and
TransferWise is Estonian, all of them. I don't know if that's known, but do you know that TransferWise is actually from Estonia?
Oh, really?
Yep. It's one of the four unicorns of Estonia, probably the one that grew the fastest lately. But that sort of shows you how they think, right? To the companies like TransferWise.
Yeah, actually, I just, like, when I got my TransferWise account, it was like, holy, this is heaven, because... if you don't know what it allows you to do is that, like, say you have a client in Iceland and you're from the US, TransferWise allows you to create what would be a bank account in Iceland in about 5 minutes or less. And then you can give that information to that client so that client can do the deposit from their bank account to yours. Like if it's a local transaction, so you save a lot of fees.
It's incredible.
And they also, and in the translation of that money, you also save a lot of fees as well. So, and they just, they started to give the debit card as well from so that you can start using the money inside TransferWise. And the thing that you can do with that is that you can set up your debit card so it can function in the money of the country you are in. So let's say you are in Bulgaria, you can set it up to working levas. So now that when you retire money from the ATMs, you're not paying the transaction fee from the retirement of the money. Also, it pretty much it allows you to do a lot of things. And this card is not yet in the US. It's been a year since the platform says that we're working on getting it, and we're getting there, but again, it's been a year and this message is still the same. On the other hand, I recently got my debit card from TransferWise and also this other one that is called Curve, because I got two friends right now in Italy who allow me to get their address and things like that, so I could set up things so I could get these cards. But pretty much I just got these ones. And Curve, what it does is that you can put all your credit and debit cards inside Curve, and you can only use that one. So if somebody clones your card, you have control over your app to block those transactions. Even it has a feature they call the time machine, so that if a transaction is being made, you have still, like, I think 2 weeks to pretty much roll back. Yeah, to roll back the transaction. Also, if you have, let's say you have set up one car and you pay for a flight and you remember, oh, this is not the car I wanted to use for that flight, I wanted to use another car, with the time machine, you can set it back so that you get the money back to that car, you put the new car in, and the transaction is being done through the new car. So again, you have 2 weeks to do that, and they have, and the black car even gives you 1% cashback. So that means that from all the purchases that you do through Curve, you get 1% back. So at the end of the year, you probably will have extra money to buy whatever you want. Yeah, and again, like, that adds a layer of security, because it is, all your cards are secured. You're only taking that one. If you can carry only that one, and then let's say if you get your wallet stolen, you block the card from your phone and things like that. So there is a lot of things. And Holby also, that this is a bank that is being
That's from Finland.
Yeah. And what it is like a full bank and accounting services for creative people who hate doing that kind of business thing, and they handle all the taxes, all the invoices, all the things, so that it is as easy as possible to understand for you. And again, these all these innovations, they are just in Europe. And if you get the residence, you can get access to many of them. And again, like, this is things that are not being done in Canada. They are not being done in the US, definitely not being done in Latin America. And you can save a lot of problems having access to all these resources.
Yeah, the most innovative places in the world. Well, first of all, it's not even in the US. Let's say you want to consider the US, if you want to talk about the US as a country, one or two places are 10x, 100x more innovative than the rest of the country, right? So maybe there's some there's of course there's innovation in Silicon Valley, blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying that you want to think in terms of cities, and the most innovative cities in the world, it's sort of not it's becoming more of a innovation by vertical, by city. So you're going to have Singapore is probably the most innovative fintech ecosystem. Silicon Valley is probably the most innovative, mass tech, system. I don't know, Beijing is probably the most innovative, manufacturing, whatever, China. Estonia, which is really like a city, is the most innovative in digital life, sort of the digital government, the digital infrastructure. So the idea of thinking that innovation is going to be always in the same place, in the same places, but I think it's still optimistic. I think it's still a reason to be optimistic, even for places like Latin America, because what it tells us is that it's not that we couldn't innovate. It's just that we shouldn't try to innovate where other places are leading the innovation. We should try to innovate in the things that we can be innovative, in the things that we can be the best. And one of the examples is Buenos Aires is actually one of the, and I don't know much about this, so I don't want to be, definitely don't want to present myself as an expert on this at all, but I do know that in Buenos Aires, there's an above average innovation and representation of Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain companies, because Argentinians love freedom and they hate the government telling them what to do with their money. And they're very entrepreneurial. Argentinians are very entrepreneurial. There's a bunch of other problems with Argentinians, but that's one of the things that when you combine sort of how many problems of inflation and corruption, all that kind of stuff that happened in Argentina over and over and over again, and you add the entrepreneurial gene, which is also in Estonia, you have the elements to do something maybe that no other place is going to do because they don't have the same problems. Estonia innovated in these things because they had problems that most countries didn't have in the right and the right attitude and the right in the right time and everything. So I think it's we should definitely be less, shouldn't worship so much the usual superpowers like the US and UK and whatever, and just think like, well, where is what I care? Where is the right place for that? Maybe I should be there.
Yeah, definitely. And talking back to the cities that are the most innovative, where are the ones that have blown your mind? Obviously, Tallinn in Estonia is one of them. Silicon Valley is the other one. But in the places where you have been or that you have seen, what are the other cities that you think are doing amazing things?
I was in Beijing for a while many years ago, and I thought, okay, this, it's so much. Like, it's too big and it's growing too fast. And it was like, it really made me, I know that Asia is the future. Like, I completely get it. The China, you should pay attention to China and India. At the same time, I was there for 2 months and I realized I have nothing to do here. I should not be here. I should not be thinking about how to work here. The cultural barrier is so big. And there's plenty of stuff to do in Spanish and English in the West. Don't need to be thinking, I think. I mean, if you're in Silicon Valley, you're a billionaire and you want to, break into the Chinese market with LinkedIn. So, okay, great. Go and do that. You have the resources, whatever. But if you're a single entrepreneur, whatever, you don't need to be thinking in China and India, I think. I was blown away. And at the same time, I was like, I'm out. Like, this is not important. Then I also was, definitely Tallinn is exciting, what they're doing, because it's so small and it's like, they're doing so many cool things. I loved Austin. And Austin felt like a better balance of entrepreneurship and quality of life than Silicon Valley in the US.
Funny that you mentioned that, because there has been a trend that people from California, Silicon Valley, Tim Ferriss, going. Ryan Holiday, figures say that, have been moving to Austin. So
I really liked Austin. I thought it was very cool. I'm trying to think of like the more sort of like business. Like, I would never go in New York, right? Like, New York is not for me. Miami is not for me. Like, all those kind of cities I don't like at all. Buenos Aires, well, not now, like the Buenos Aires, I'm from there, but it's really sad that the context is so against you that I think it creates warriors, but it doesn't create entrepreneurship ecosystem. It just creates people that just like came out of this like burning house and they're like, they have all the scars and they're like, I'll fight anybody, but it doesn't mean that that's going to make you succeed. I was in Iceland and I felt curious about what they're gonna do. So they're so small and they're still like, I don't know, Iceland is interesting. Like, I'm curious what they're gonna be doing, Reykjavik. And let me see if I have one more for you. I mean, Helsinki is very nice. Actually, one very cool thing is gonna happen is that I think one of the, I think this was Skype. One of the, so Skype came from Estonia. Skype is the most famous company that came out of Estonia. And one of the things that talks well about Estonia is that the Skype founders, with all the money that they made from selling it to Microsoft, they put a bunch of that money investing into new startups of Estonia. So there's the Skype mafia, right? The people that were the first employees and the founders and the first investors, and they built new companies and et cetera. So I think people from TransferWise worked on Skype, and people from, what is the other one? Bolt, which is sort of like this Uber competition, which is bigger in Europe. Bolt is bigger in Europe than Uber. It's from Estonia. And so there, I think they also had some Skype employees or whatever. But anyway, the point is, one of those Skype founders, I think, wants to put a bunch of money, with some Chinese money, with some whatever money, and they want to build sort of like a tunnel, an underwater tunnel that goes from Tallinn to Helsinki, which is like 70 kilometers or 80 kilometers, something like that. And then you will be able to drive from Tallinn to Helsinki in like half hour. That, if that happens, now you're talking about a megalopolis that it's super exciting for the next 30 years, because you're the tech education, computer education in Estonia and in Finland is huge. Quality of life is great. They get along very well culturally, Estonians and Finnish people. Helsinki is bigger. I mean, it's just going to be so powerful. I would say I would add Helsinki in that sort of Helsinki Tallinn combo. I think that's one of the most exciting things to think about. So yeah. Oh, and finally, haven't been, but I'm hearing more and more and more about the perks of being in Madrid. So that's another one to consider.
Yeah, definitely. And well, something that also we have to mention here, especially like when you open businesses, like for me, opening a business in the US has been the best decision ever. It solved a lot of problems. As you mentioned, in your case, Argentina is like so much against you. My country as well is probably is that plus 100 because everything is so much against you that again, like, it doesn't create an entrepreneurship environment. It definitely creates warriors, but again, as you say, like, it's not, I have seen a lot of those warriors try entrepreneurship and fail because they just had too much of an aggressive mentality, let's say. And they also have, because of the experience of El Salvador, and they've been burned so much that they didn't trust many things. Even my business partner, I have to constantly tell him from time to time, because we're getting some big client and he's nervous that he's going to pay. It's like, dude, relax. We have never been burned internationally speaking. Like, it's been 3 years. Nothing bad has happened. Every time that we put trust in here, it just comes out right. And when I was starting to go into entrepreneurship, joining mastermind groups, opening the business in the US, and even when I got my Pioneer back in 2012, when they finally opened to the public, at every stage that I have tried to do something new, the people around me here in my country came up saying it is a scam, they are going to rob your money, something bad is going to happen, you should not do this. It's like, because they have been burned so much, they have this willingness to not trust anything that sounds good, because they don't want to get their hopes up and then be burned again. And so what ends up happening is, like, I took the decision, okay, yes, I have been burned many times, but I have been burned in this country, trusting people here, trusting clients here, trusting all, okay, this is where the things have been going wrong. Now I have been a couple of years in the entrepreneurship, and every time I trusted these guys outside internationally, everything has gone fine, even much better than I expected. So let's do this exercise for a year. Let's distrust completely the side of my country. And just now I have a little bit more leniency to that, but I just wanted to do that mental experiments, which are things that I do. I did some kind of extreme mental experiments from time to time, but that was it. I'm going to distrust everything here. I'm going to stop trusting things in my country or taking into consideration their advice, quote-unquote advice. And I'm going to trust all everything that I have into the international resources, people, elements. I'm going to put all my hopes there. And the moment I did that, the results were staggering. Like, they just been mind-blowing. And things keep happening over and over again. Like, I opened Pioneer. I joined my PayPal account. Now I was able to receive money for the first time in my life, because in my country, you cannot even receive money from PayPal. You can receive it, but you can only spend it through PayPal, in eBay, or something like that. But if I want to make that money real in my country and, let's say, pay my electric bill, that is not something that you can do. So I do that, and now I can receive money through PayPal and get it into my Pioneer debit card, and I can get that cash out of the ATM. And I was like, oh, finally, finally I can do this. But what happened is that 2 years later, PayPal blocked Pioneer because there were many people from Latin America using that to pay drug services and things like that. So they discovered that and they blocked it. And now, after people saw me for 2 years using that without any problem, they wanted to get in. But now PayPal had blocked Pioneer and never blocked it. So they lost the opportunity to do that because they didn't trust it. And the connection from my PayPal to my Pioneer still exists. It's still there. It's still working, because I did it when it was starting out. But now they lost that chance when Atlas launched with the Stripe. As soon as they launched and they allowed it to open the business in the US, I went in. Like, I put all my information like 3 times. And I was able to get into the beta testers. So I opened my business in the US and didn't cost me any money at all, because the first 500 people that they accepted for the beta testing, they were giving it for free. And I was like, yeah, I got a business register in the US, and I have a bank account in Silicon Valley Bank, and now I can use a Stripe, I can use PayPal, I can use whatever I want. And that unblocked a world of possibilities. And then again, like, people were telling me that I was crazy for doing that. And 2 years later, now it is paid, and people are trying to do that, but now they have to come up with the $500 to do that. So it's like, this long?
People tend to wait too long. Most people are too risk averse. And one of the things I always tell everybody is, being first will have some problems, but the benefits always outweigh the problems, like, of being early. Like, when I got the e-residency thing, for me, being first has brought, and I'm not talking, I am just a user of a freaking card that the government gave. I haven't done anything, but so many people were interested about that so many people reached out to me, that has brought, opened up connections and businesses for me and a bunch of different things. Just because I was the first Argentinian to get it. So I'm the first Argentinian resident of Estonia. And in Argentina, that, I think on next Monday, I have a radio interview with a podcast sponsored by Oracle or some BS like that. That is about that. It's about, they want to know about that. So I get all this exposure because I was just first to do something. When you wait for everything to be safe, you probably also are losing on all the early, the low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, definitely. And another one that is, and this is, again, just to show how paranoid Salvadorian people are, that it's funny, because this one didn't cost anything, which is that when Alexa came out, and Google didn't have this smart speaker, Apple didn't have this smart speaker, I already had the podcast from the Creative Monster Show, and I pretty much integrated it into TuneIn, and I I have radio and other things, so I could be available in Alexa as well. And then soon after, Google launches speaker and Apple launches a smart speaker as well. And I posted there that the Creative Hustle Show, the other podcast that I have, was available in those smart speakers. And people from countries started laughing at me and pretty much telling me that why I was doing that. They were only thinking locally, because they thought like, oh, like, who cares that you just added that to that? Like, nobody in El Salvador is going to get that speaker. It's like, dude, my podcast is in English in first place. Secondly, it didn't cost me anything, but they were so negative against it because it was the new thing and it was ridiculous and that I was being an idiot. And a couple of months later, if I see the metrics of my podcast, the top 5 cities that listen my podcast come from cities that are technologically advanced. San Francisco, San Diego, New York, Dublin, Berlin. All the cities that if I look into Google, it will show that most of the people there are buying the Echo speaker, are buying the Apple HomePod, are buying the Google Home Assistant. So now, because I was one of, and probably I think I still one of the podcasts that are, I think there is about 3 podcasts in the art, in the creative industry that are available in Alexa, and mine is one of them. And it's giving me a lot, like, I have the YouTube channel as well, and the podcast is doing so much better than the YouTube channel because I integrated it into the smart speakers.
Yeah, people are not good. Most people are not good sources of advice. And even people that are good sources of advice sometimes give bad advice. So like, because people tend to give advice sort of retroactively, right? They advise themselves and what they should have, they would have done in the past or whatever. So I think if you're going to hear advice, it should be from somebody that at least has experience in the thing they're advising. Like, not hear advice from somebody that is worried about something they've never done. Just get advice from somebody that maybe did something and that you're going to tell you why it didn't work, right? Or what part didn't work. So people that, just tell you, like, don't do this because, but they don't know because they never done it. Like, what the hell? Horrible advice.
Yeah, definitely. And again, like, it is sad because I see a lot of people who are very talented. Although, to be honest, at this point, I think that talent is not worth anything. We discussed this in the past that for some reason, I think we both have been placed into this very weird life scenario. I don't know what I did in my past life to be set up in this way, but I've been surrounded by so many people who have so much more talent than me that at the end have done absolutely nothing.
It's hard for me to even understand at this point what talent, what it is. Like, how do what does it mean to be talented? I guess it means potential. I'm not sure. It's not the most useful, important thing to have. I think being humble, humble I mean like being sort of curious, humble, always learning, always absorbing, like that kind of thing, seems to be much more important than talent. And also, and being well connected, I think, is much more important than talent.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard recently this definition of humility, that is that understanding that you do not know enough to not fuck it up.
Interesting.
And he was like, again, explaining the difference, because especially in Latin America, I think we have this problem where people think that being humble means putting themselves down.
Right.
And that is not humility at all. that is
no, that's like that's poor self-esteem. That's not.
Yeah, exactly. That is psychological problems. That is not humility. Yeah. Humility is knowing that you do not know enough.
Right.
Do not fuck it up. And also, if you understand that, then you can be a little bit more open to testing things out, to experience things out, and see what comes through out of that. And this is something weird because, again, I've seen so many people who are way more smart than me, way more talented than me at selling, at art, at many other things, right? And they haven't achieved, like, many of them end up in a call center or in a kind of a teacher position that is not in a good school or does not pay them really well, to be honest. And the thing is, and they are not even like in the position where they are teachers and they are doing actual life-changing work, because I have some of their students come entering my company and they tell me like they can see that they hate teaching. So there's that as well. And the thing is that so much has come from me from actually having a little bit of pride on the fact that I'm stupid. It's like many of the things, many of the attitude that I take when trying new things is kind of the attitude that Johnny Knoxville had in Jackass. Like, hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville, welcome to Jackass. And then he went to do something stupid. But sometimes he did something amazing, something that was really awesome. And this is the thing, when Pioneer came out, he was like, okay, I'm Rodrigo Flamenco, welcome to Jackass. Let's kick this out. And when Atlas Strike came out, it's like, again, the same thing. Like, okay, this is something that I've been looking for years. Let's see what happens. And obviously that sometimes leads to problems. I'm going to deny it. As you say, being the first leads to certain kind of problems.
Yeah.
And my example was that when I was in Europe, I was like, finally living here. Like, my dream. But because I was the first in Atlas Strike, they weren't given the debit card for the bank, the Silicon Valley bank account that I had. So I just had the bank account, didn't have any debit card, didn't have any other way to get money out of that. So what I had to do was to do a wire transfer from the Silicon Valley bank to the to my local bank account in El Salvador, and then use my local bank debit card to get the money out of Europe, which obviously was bleeding money because every time I took out money out of the ATM, they got the fee and things like that. But I was getting enough money, so I didn't care much. But then what happened? Again, the country being against entrepreneurship and things like that, they put these new laws against money laundering. Now all the money that comes from the US is looked bad, and they put a block. And then I was in Bulgaria and I have my bank account blocked. The systems, because they just launched it, it was so buggy that it wasn't working, and they weren't able to unlock my money. And I was like, I just had $100 left, and I need this money unblocked. And it was like, and they were just telling me, oh, you just have to come back and sign. And it's like, I'm on the other side of the world. Like, I cannot even pay the ticket to go back. And after 3 hours of fighting, I was finally able to do the operation they wanted me to do online, and pretty much that unblocked my money, but that created a new problem. So I had to come back to my country, fix a lot of issues, but now they were offering now the debit card, so I got it, and now that I have the TransferWise card, the Curve card, and the Silicon Valley card, and Pioneer as well, it's like, okay, I'm sad. Right. Like, my money does not have to come through my country anymore, and I can be free and move wherever I want. So that was a problem, a definitely big problem that came up from being one of the first people who joined up to Atlas Stripe. But
right. Yeah,
the benefits are worth it.
So there's always the risk of doing things for, but like I said, I think it becomes, you learn things faster, you get advantage, you get early advantages. People that are offering something early usually will give you more because you're one of the earliest ones. Like, there's so many reasons to go ahead and try.
Any advice that you would like to give to young people who are still students, who are about to enter the real world, and again, coming back to the talent, who are very talented, what advice would you give to them, and what advice should they ignore?
To young people that are getting into sort of out of college or whatever?
Yeah.
So I was actually telling this to my brother. I have a younger brother. I was sort of telling him, your 20s are not the time to focus on money. Now, I'm not saying be poor. I'm saying there's a ceiling to how much money you can make when you're just getting started. So even if you're a greedy, blood-sucking, whatever, and you're obsessed with making money, you're limited to how much you can make because you're limited to how much you can offer. You don't have too many skills yet. You don't have too much experience. Unless you're one of those, like, you know, if you're a kid that's been coding since you're 12 and like, well, okay, fine, those are all different stories. I'm talking like the standard kid that went to school and then goes to college and is like 22, 23, 24, and now they're going to start working. What you have to offer is pretty, it's not a lot of value because everybody goes to school and everybody has those kind of, and what you learn in school and in many degrees is not applicable and useful for the real work anyway. So the point is, you want to invest in yourself in your 20s. You don't want to be trying to cash in your 20s. You cash in later. In your 20s, you invest. And the way you invest is by working for things. It's like imagine you have, you know, those video games where you're like creating a character and you have like, oh, you have, I don't know, 20 points to put on the different attributes of the character. So you can put all in strength or speed or whatever. So don't put all the points that you have in money, because there's all these other things that if you put money, if you put some points now, some time in now, will pay off more later. What are those things? Network. Get work for relationships. Don't work for a paycheck. Work in things that will connect with a bunch of people, a bunch of interesting people. Work for skills. Work in things that will teach you more, not in things that you'll do something boring that doesn't teach you anything after a couple of weeks or months. Work for like sort of exploring problems versus things that are not very interesting or that are very solved already. So like try to, your 20s should be this thing where you're sort of watering or you're nourishing all these different parts of you that once they grow will pay off better instead of just trying to sell the water that you have, the only little thing you have. No, don't sell that water. Don't work time for money. Work time for a little bit of money and a little bit of skills and a little bit of relationships, a little bit of all those things. In fact, I would argue you should work. I used to call this like high network project. Like always have one thing that you're doing. It could be a small thing. It could be something that takes like 5% of your time or 10% of your time, but do something where it's all the entire value, all you get from it is relationships. Don't do that. You're not going to get paid for it. You may not learn much other than sort of the relationship building part of it. But those relationships will compound and will have exponential effects later. It becomes, once you start sort of, there's a point that if you've been building your relationships for a while, it really becomes exponential. And it becomes a point where you're not doing it active anymore. It makes no sense for you to be going out to do networking because your networks just grow just because the people that know you talk about you to the other people that they know. And it's just like, you will never run out of people to meet. You will never run out of people to ask for advice, to ask for a job, to ask for clients, whatever. So again, look at your 20s as the decade of investment and work for money later once you have a bigger repertoire of skills and understanding of what has value. So I would say those are that would be the biggest advice I would give to most people that I think most people don't follow. I think most people look for a job, look for safety. you do not need to be safe in your 20s. You should be very, you should be moderately unsafe in your 20s. You should be doing risky shit. You shouldn't be doing, yeah, you'll need safety later where you have a family, where you're getting older, something starts to hurt, like whatever. But in your 20s, you're healthy, you're at, go and do crazy shit. I'm not saying go party. I'm saying go do risky sort of that has high potential of like a high return potential for your career, for your growth, spending yourself as well to like your own ideas, your own values, try to understand yourself, learn what's okay for you, what you wouldn't do again. Like that's the part of your 20s that I think most people should do. Be very aggressively experimenting and very aggressively investing in yourself.
Definitely. I definitely agree with that. And if people want to find more about you, where can they do so?
Sure. Just Google, if you Google like Carlos Miceli, or if you basically everywhere, just put Carlos Miceli. So like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, email, or in Google, you know, carlosmiceli.com. Just my name and my last name. You'll find me for sure. And happy to whatever thing anybody wants to talk, happy to chat about it.
Awesome. I will put all the links as well in the post for this interview. So perfect. Thanks a lot for giving us your time and your experience and helping me grow this podcast. I really appreciate that you're here.
It's a pleasure, Rodrigo. I love talking to you, man. And I love that you're doing this. Happy to help. Anytime we can do it again.
Awesome. So right. That has been the last episode of Level Up. If you like it, please click the like button below, click the subscribe button and also the notification icon. And if you're listening from the podcast, please click the subscribe button. Until next time.